Everyone, thank you for coming to the second Refuse Rate Public Workshop. This being held virtually, the first one was in person last Tuesday. I'm Jay Liao, I'm the Refuse Rates Administrator. I lead the Office of the Refuse Rates Administrator, and I'm joined here by our Refuse Rate Analyst, Ben Becker. Our office is overseen by, is within the controller's office, it's overseen by Ben Rosenfield, the controller, and Todd Reedstrom, the deputy controller. Next slide. So we've got a full agenda today, and we'll start with me giving you a little bit of background around the rate setting process and our schedule. And then we'll have presentations from Jack Macy at the Department of Environment and from Bruce Robertson at the Department of Public Works. And they'll share a little bit about some of their refuse-related program proposals that are also rate funded. And then we'll have Recology present on their rate change proposal that was submitted March 7th. We'll have some time for comments and questions, and then we'll close out with a little bit of or we'll review the next steps in the process, and we'll provide links to some resources that folks can also find on our website. Before we jump into that, I'm going to talk a little bit about I forgot to introduce the Recology speaker. That'd be Jamario Jackson, who's going to present on the rate change proposal. And then before we jump into the rate setting process, I'll talk a little bit about goals and how to participate. So next slide, please. So we have two goals. First is to provide information to ratepayers and members of the public on the rate setting process, on the city refuse related program proposals, and the Recology's proposal. And the second is to give opportunity for ratepayers and members of the public to give them opportunity to provide input to our office to inform the proposed rate order that will be submitted to the Refuse Rate Board. In terms of participation, during the presentation, you'll be able to make written comments online. We'll attempt to address as many as we can, depending on volume, but you can go to this link here, it's forms.office.com. Sorry, it's a jumble of letters. You can also find this form on our website for written comments. It's the same form. At the end of the presentation, there will be opportunity for oral comment. So we're asking participants to keep their comments under 2 minutes. If it feels like there are fewer attendees, we may give you a little bit more time. Participants on WebEx, the WebEx app, can enter the commenting queue by clicking that raised hand button. And then participants calling in can enter the queue by dialing in *3. Okay, next slide. So I'll jump into the rate setting process now. Next slide, please. This rate process is different from previous rate processes, and a lot of that stems from Proposition F, which was passed June 2022 by voters. And established 4 principles to help create a more fair, transparent, and accountable rate setting process. And I won't read through all these slides. There's a lot of text here. It's more for kind of posterity and for folks unable to attend the meetings to be able to read, but I'll talk through them. So these 4 principles, the first is the refuse service shall be cost effective. The second is that the refuse rate structure shall be stable and reasonable and fair. And third is that the process will be transparent, accountable, and publicly accessible. And the last one is really geared towards our office, which should be where our work should be conducted in line with high professional ethical standards. And from our perspective, our hope is that as we adhere to these first 3 principles, we can kind of demonstrate that high professional ethical standards and really help rebuild public trust. Next slide. So Prop F really had 5 major changes, and the first was to make the controller's office the refuse rate administrator. And so the second change, as refuse rate administrator, the controller was removed from the refuse rate board. And is being replaced by a ratepayer representative. So the board consists of the city administrator, the general manager of the PUC, and a ratepayer representative. The third is important here. It really does change the rate setting process in a significant way, where the rates used to be set through these Department of Public Works directors' hearings. And the rate board, if they didn't act on it, the rates would automatically go into effect. This really shifts that rate setting process to the refuse rate board, and the rate board needs to, where the refuse rate administrator, our office, will recommend rates, and the refuse rate board will need to hear the recommendations, hear public input, hear any other analysis, and make a decision on the rates. The fourth is it authorizes refuse rate board to set commercial rates. Currently, the city only regulates residential rates. The refuse rate board is authorized but does not necessarily have to set those commercial rates. And lastly, the Prop F allows the Board of Supervisors to legislatively amend the refuse ordinance by supermajority vote. Next slide. So, in addition to Proposition F, we take guidance from a couple settlement agreements that the city reached with Recology. The first is a March 2021 settlement where Recology agreed to pay $101 million in restitution, interest, and penalties to ratepayers for errors in the 2017 rate application. And then the December 2022 settlement with the city, where Recology agreed to deposit $25 million into a balancing account, which will be used to stabilize the rate year 2023 rates. Also, along with these, also in these two settlements also outlined a number of reporting requirements that are either being implemented or have been implemented or are being implemented now. Next slide. So we also take guidance. The last piece of input we're taking is guidance in terms of the process is guidance from two public integrity reviews conducted by the Comptroller's Office Auditing Division, April 2021 audit, and then an April May 2022 audit. That was an update of the first audit. There will be a third audit of the landfill agreement that's pending release. Next slide. And so these first two public integrity views, these two audits, they laid out a number of recommendations. This is just kind of a high-level list of the main recommendations. The first is to ensure conduct and reporting at the highest standards of ethical conduct, greater transparency in financial statements. I already mentioned most of these recommendations have been implemented. If not, they're being implemented. Clear and consistent rate setting methodology, and that's part of what we're going through now is setting that methodology. Regularly conducting rate analyses of comparable jurisdictions, and so you'll see that in our refuse rate order as well. Establishing a balancing account. So the 2022 settlement established a balancing account for rate year 2023. We'll be using that as a possible model for the rate order for the next 2 years. And then ensuring public access to all of our information. So we are posting all documents on our website. Next slide. So this is a look at our calendar. Just for some context, typically these rate setting processes are a year plus, just given the timing of Prop F and the timing of establishing this office. We are looking more at a 7-month sprint here. But despite that, we are working to include as many opportunities for public input as we can. And so you'll see these stars, red stars, are just opportunities for oral input. There are 11 total. And then there's opportunity for written objection. We've given you the link to that form that's on our website as well. And then there will be a Prop 218 45-day protest period once we release our proposed rate order. And so we look at this calendar in kind of three phases. The first is the rate change request. We initiated this process by issuing our rate change forms at the end of January. And then there was submission. This was actually beginning of March was our first submission from Recology. That moved us into phase two, which is the rate order proposal development, which includes analyses of the submission, our own analyses of rate, jurisdictional rate comparisons, profit margin analyses. But along with that, we are taking in public input. And so the first two items here you see, March 14th, March 16th, are these public workshops. Then we have statutorily required commission hearings. The first will be Sanitation Streets Commission next Monday, and then Commission on the Environment the following week. These hearings, I think, will be fairly similar to what you're going to hear today in terms of presentations, but there are also opportunities for comment, public comment, and also opportunities for commissioners to kind of understand the context of this work and to have questions as well. We'll kick off the Refuse Rate Board hearing in April, and this is more of a housekeeping hearing. There are a number of housekeeping items to get that board set up, and you'll also see kind of similar presentations from today there as well. We're hoping that ahead of the second set of commission hearings, we'll have some draft of the rate order to share, at least presentations of it. And those will be heard in front of the Sanitation Streets Commission and the Commission on Environment. After we've had those hearings, we are anticipating to complete the proposed rate order and issue that end of May, early June. Once that's issued, that triggers phase three, where the rate board needs to hear our rate order. And so we have a series of four rate board hearings in June and July. That puts us in a position to notice in the middle of August, giving ratepayers some time to adjust to rates which become effective October 1st. Next slide. So just talking a little bit about the various roles in the rate setting process. So we really see this in two tranches. The first is rate setting input, and the second is monitoring, recommendation, and adoption. So in input, there's public input from ratepayers, members of public, the city departments, which includes DPW, their Streets and Sanitation Commission, Department of Environment, Commission on Environment, and DPH. And then lastly, refuse companies, which is Recology. For monitoring recommendation, that's our office, Refuse Rates Administrator, and then refuse rate adoption would be the Refuse Rate Board. Next slide. This is just more detail about kind of rules and opportunities for input for these various entities. For public input, the members of the public will have opportunities with these public workshops, commission hearings, Refuse Rate Board hearings, and then the written objection and written protest. City departments, so DPW receives funding through the solid waste impound account, which is ratepayer funded. They use this funding for refuse-related cleaning services. One of their oversight bodies is the Sanitation and Streets Commission, and they'll be hearing presentations from us on this process and the rate order, as well as DPW's proposal. Department of Environment also receives funding from the solid waste impound account, which is ratepayer funded, and that's for the implementation of programs related to zero waste, toxics, and consumption-based emissions in the 2021 Climate Action Plan. Their oversight body is the Commission on Environment. They'll hear information presented from us as well as environment's proposals. And then DPH plays a different role. They ensure adequate refuse service through the issuance of licenses and route permits. And they also have this role as responding to public complaints associated with refuse collections, in particular billing. Finally, as the refuse companies have opportunities to provide input, their main opportunities are through the rate change request form and then through rate board and commission hearings. Next slide. And then for refuse rate monitoring recommendations, that's our office, and we have four primary responsibilities: proposing refuse rates to the Refuse Rate Board, monitoring financial and operational performance of refuse companies, performing studies and investigations, and advising the Refuse Rate Board. The refuse rate adoption falls solely with the refuse rate board. As I mentioned, it's comprised, chaired by the city administrator, includes the GM of SFPUC and every peer representative. And so they have really two primary responsibilities. One is to conduct hearings on our rate proposal and to adopt the rate order based on evidence and record made during the hearings. And then they must also adopt performance standards for the refuse companies. Next slide. So I'm going to talk a little bit about components of the rate and the rate calculation just at a very high level. So the refuse rates are outlined across six rate schedules. The rate terms last a minimum of 2 years and a maximum of 5 years. In the last rate order, there was an automatic cost of living adjustment that was applied between rate terms. And so that if there's an agreement on that, that can be something that's applied here as well. There are three of the rate schedules are city regulated, that the residential refuse rates, and those are residential buildings with 5 units or less, and then apartment buildings with 6+ units, and there's slight variations in how those rates are charged. Apartment buildings also have a diversion discount that may apply. The tipping fee is a disposal fee for refuse delivered to any Recology San Francisco facilities, and these are also set by the city. These flow into the residential and an apartment fees and charges, but they also serve as a charge for any non-ratepayers that are delivering refuse to those facilities. On the right side is the Recology set uniform negotiated other rates. So these are not rates set by the city. They're the commercial rates, compactor and debris box rates, and extra service refuse rates. Next slide. And so this is kind of a quick look at the calculation. So past practice rate setting really starts with determining rate eligibility for costs and revenue. So, Recology is large operations. Some of those costs and revenues are not part of the rate process or rate setting process. Once those rate eligible costs are then determined, those costs are then determined for profit eligibility. So, for example, collection of the three bins, Recology is given an allowable profit margin. Whereas refuse-related services conducted by DPW or Department of Environment are not eligible for profit. They're only eligible for cost recovery. So once the categorization of costs and revenues are determined, past practice requires a calculation of the operating ratio. For the purposes of this presentation, we will present the inverse of the OR, which is the allowable profit margin. And these include three main considerations for refuse rate settings. So the allowable profit margin is the net profit divided by the rate eligible revenue requirement. The net profit is essentially total revenue minus total expenditures. And then the third is rate eligible revenue requirement. And this is the amount of revenue needed to be generated by rate eligible services in order to cover costs and generate the allowable profit. So that's essentially your eligible expenditures plus that allowable profit. So all our rate setting variables are projected. These are for rate years 2024 and 2025, which means some of these variables are controllable, some of them are not. So controllable variable, one example could be hiring. Variables that are beyond our control, for example, a pandemic impacting commercial accounts. The percent difference between the projected revenue at current rates and the rate eligible revenue requirement will determine the change to the refuse rates and the tipping fee. So we calculate the percentage difference by calculating where revenues are at current rates and what we need and the difference for where we need to get to meet that rate eligible revenue requirement. Next slide. And this is our last slide for rate setting process context. So past rates have included a zero waste incentive account and a solid waste fee impound account. And so the zero waste incentive account is a waste diversion account that Recology can draw down if diversion targets are met. So this generates approximately 8 million per year, and meeting all targets would equal an additional 2% in profit. And then the solid waste fee impound account, this is the account that funds select services at DPW and Department of Environment. So that's including refuse-related cleaning services at DPW and services to support the city's zero waste goals at Department of Environment. And then lastly, with the December 2022 settlement, the next rate setting cycle will include consideration of a balancing account and other settlement provisions. Next slide. And so that kind of rounds it out for kind of background around the rate setting process. I'll be happy to take questions on that during the public comment and question period, but we're going to move on to the next presentations, and we'll start with Jack Macy at Department of Environment. Next slide.
Thank you. I'm Jack Macy, the Zero Waste Program Manager for the San Francisco Environment Department. I will be elaborating a bit on the department's role, the funding that it gets from the impound and proposed funding in the new rates, and the department's priorities in the rate process. The department's mission is to provide solutions that advance climate protection, enhance quality of life, and environmental protection for all San Franciscans. Next slide. A key driver for the department is the city's 2021 Climate Action Plan. And this is a data-driven community-based plan that focuses on six interconnected key sectors with 31 strategies and 159 recommended actions across those sectors to achieve the city's adopted goal of net zero climate emissions by 2040. And these are creating solutions that service intersectional challenges that include racial and social equity, public health, economic recovery, and resilient communities. It incorporates climate models for both the traditional sector-based and the newer consumption-based emissions. Mitigating one sector can have a beneficial impact on another. For example, reducing consumption reduces waste, which reduces emissions. And creates beneficial outcomes throughout these sectors. The importance of this plan was affirmed by the Board of Supervisors and the mayor, and they've also allocated some general funding. So supplementing that in one area in particular, which is highlighted with the green arrow, consumption, responsible production consumption, that sector is kind of reframes and incorporates the city's zero waste goal and recognizes the life cycle impact of products that San Francisco's consume and the subsequent resulting discards. So we'll move on to the next. So that in addressing the climate action plan, that sector of responsible production and consumption, if we can go to the next slide, we have the department's programs that kind of help contribute towards that, as well as our zero waste goals and zero toxics. So we've got zero waste, toxics, climate, environmental justice, green billing, and outreach. The total projected impound budget for the rate year ending 2024, and that the rate year being October 1 to September 30th, is 14.7 million and 15.1 million in rate year 25. This represents about 4% of ratepayer revenue, both in the current rate year as well as in the projected rate years. And the increased budget of just over $1 million results from increased salary benefits overhead and a slight, just around one FTE with increased mandates. So this is about 45% of the department's entire funding and is related to the impact of refuse. The next slide, please, shows a more detailed programmatic budget, the kind of six key program areas of zero waste with about 4 million in the next rate year, toxics 2.5 million, climate but 2/3 of a million, environmental justice just more than that, green building, a little under three quarters of a million. And then our outreach program, really supporting all those areas with a lot of engagement of the public on a lot of different levels, has a budget of 6 million. So I want to just illustrate a little bit what some of these program areas are doing that is being funded by the impound. So the next slide, I'll just talk a little bit about the Zero Waste. So the Zero Waste program is really tasked towards helping meet the city's adopted goal of zero waste, that is goal of reducing to zero the amount of discards being disposed, and being disposed meaning going to landfill or incineration. So this is overseeing waste reduction, reuse, recycling, and composting programs. We also are working to achieve interim zero waste and climate targets to reduce emissions and discards, reduce the generation of all discards. That's what's going in, for example, of all three bins, everything that San Francisco's discard. We want to reduce, we're working to reduce that by 15% by 2030, and reducing the disposal, what goes into the black or gray bin, by 50% by 2030. And we also are responsible for many local and state mandates. We've got something like 15 chapters of the Environmental Code that we're responsible for, as well as numerous state laws. And those mandates keep increasing nearly every year, including the comprehensive state law, SB 1383 for organics recovery. And our work includes both, you know, examples of this work includes both material reuse, as well as food waste prevention and available food donation, packaging reduction, repair and use of textiles and other products, increasing participation and compliance in recycling and composting. And there it shows that we've got about just under 12 FTE, full-time equivalent staff, as well as the budget of about 4 million for the rate year ending in 2024, and just over that for the following year. The next slide, on toxics reduction. This is basically materials that should not go in any of the three bins. We call that no bin, but we're looking at, you know, hazardous waste, products that have, you know, potential health impacts, as well as some items that are too big, medicines, batteries, electronics. And the program really focuses on providing alternative collection programs, working to create greater producer responsibility and funding for that, in compliance with state and local laws, a green business program. And this is an area where we also are working to comply, as I said, with many, many laws. And that is, they have a staff of 11 FTE and about $2.5 million budget. And the next slide, for we have a green building program. This is really focusing on implementing a couple of our environmental chapters for both, that embody both local and state mandates. CalGreen's a state mandate. Big emphasis for what's being funded by the impound is building material reuse. Most of our construction and demolition related work is not funded by the impound, but where we're looking at material reuse, that is being funded, and about 2.5 staff involved in that, under $750,000. Next slide, we have an environmental justice program that is working to kind of address the direct connection between environmental justice and the location of virtually the entire city recycling solid waste infrastructure in the southeast sector of the city. Area that has the highest percentages of BIPOC, that's Black, Indigenous, people of color, low-income communities that are disproportionately impacted by traffic and facility operations. Also, our environmental justice group looks at just communities that may be a bit, you know, marginalized by illegal dumping, and also those that haven't had as full access to our programs, particularly in the affordable housing community. So there's a lot of work being done, direct work, direct outreach and assistance to affordable housing properties. This includes three staff and just over $700,000. The next program I want to highlight is our climate program. And that's the next slide. So the climate program basically is responsible for implementing. They developed and now they're coordinating the implementation of the very large and complex climate action plan that I was discussing. And the particular area that relates to zero waste is the concept of consumption-based emissions, looking at the life cycle impact. And we have a whole new inventory that we've been doing on that, as well as targets in the climate action plan and in our code for reducing emissions. And this involves a staff of 2.5 and just over $600,000. And now on to the next slide. Our largest program area that is supporting all these programs is our outreach, where we're doing comprehensive outreach, promotion, marketing, field engagement, a lot of direct work with residents and businesses, a lot of door-to-door work, a lot of events. We have a school education team that works for K-12, supporting schools around their increased recycling and composting and education that supports that, and also a focus on underserved communities and a lot of in-language work. So this is a 19 FTE and with a budget of $6 million. So that kind of sums up the what our impound covers broadly and by program area. And I just want to shift now to the priorities that we have been working with Recology for this rate setting process. The next slide kind of highlights really the key overall priorities, which first off include the state and local policy compliance. So I said we have more local and state policies that we need to comply with, which includes annual reporting to the state on that compliance. So we're really needing critical information from Recology related to reporting on their activities and the compliance that they're observing, and who has service and who does not, as well as some other requirements in some of these laws. And another area of priority is really improving the outreach that Recology does to their customers with the challenge of some of the turnover we see in certain areas, and just making sure that good, clear, consistent messages are getting out. And one of the areas that we've clarified is the need to have a comprehensive outreach piece received by all residents, and looking at single family 1 year and then the apartments the next, so alternating. That's something that's not been done at that level. We also want to increase in-language customer service. And then another key area is reducing the contamination in the streams, whether it's in composting or recycling, with improper materials being placed in those bins, or recyclables, compostables being placed in the trash bin. So that's what we mean by contamination. And we need to help reduce that, as well as increase participation in our program so that we can increase recovery. Recovery meaning what we're keeping away from the landfill. So whatever goes into the blue and green bin that should go in there, we're recovering. And that's our recovery, and our recovery rate is the percentage of that. And the other concept that we have here, so there's, in terms of contamination, Recology will be instituting consistently in certain sectors, improved monitoring across the board, and the use of contamination charges that have been previously allowed in rate processes. Those are extra charges. And the other area I want to touch on are zero waste incentive and trash processing. We'll go to the next slide, so just elaborate a little bit on that. So zero waste incentive is really about creating an incentive, a financial incentive for Recology to do more to help reduce disposal and to increase the recovery, the amount that they handle going into being recovered through composting and recycling. Currently, that recovery, what Recology is handling, is about 39%. And we look at how we can achieve that 2030 target I mentioned of reducing disposal, and that equates to Recology achieving a 70% recovery in 2030. And so we've, working with Recology, have set targets or goals from the current, for where we are now, to 2030. And for the next rate year, two rate years, we've got four different goals, targets or tiers for each year. And those percentages that you see in the slide, 41%, 42%, and 43% for the rate year ending 24, represent the percentage of everything that Recology handles that they are recovering or diverting away from landfill, through recycling, composting, and reuse. And then the next year, the percentage targets go up further. As you heard from the controller presentation, this is something that is zero waste incentives have been done in the past. What's changing here is instead of focusing just on disposal targets, which are disposal levels, which are harder to control if the economy changes a lot, this is focused on what Recology does to recover. And if they meet these, if they demonstrate that they've met this recovery targets through their tonnage reporting to the city, then they can access these funds after they've achieved those targets. If they cannot, then tier one and tier two will automatically go back to credit for the ratepayers, such as balancing COLA, and then the other two tiers would either go back to ratepayers or could be Recology can apply to use those funds for helping to advance city goals. And my final slide is about the trash processing priority. We recognize that as long as we have our black gray bins out there for trash, it helps keep recycling and composting cleaner. We see that we're still getting a lot of compostable and recycled material improperly placed in trash. And I think even with improved outreach and compliance, we will still see a substantial amount. So a 2020 study, we found over half of what was being placed in the black bins, trash bins, was more than half was readily recyclable and compostable. There are advances in technologies to sort the trash bin to help recover which can be marketed, such as some metals and plastics in the recycling. And then a lot of it going into compostable organic recovery, such as through composting. So with these new technologies, there's an opportunity for us to test those, because ultimately we've concluded that in order to achieve our 2030 targets and eventually achieve our zero waste goal, we have to process the trash stream to recover what we can before final disposal. And so we want to advance that through evaluating the technologies that are available in the region and come up with a plan for future scaling of trash processing. And there's about $500,000 in the budget proposed in the rates for that. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
We'll move to the next slide. So it's Bruce.
Thanks, Jack. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Bruce Robertson. I'm the Deputy Director of Financial Management and Administration with Public Works. Next slide, please. So similar to the presentation just made by Environment, I'll go through the refuse rate goals and some of the items contained in the upcoming Public Works budget. So many of our goals are just a continuation of many of our successful programs currently underway at Public Works. The outreach and enforcement team that provides staff to go around and ensure compliance and refuse processes are happening in accordance with rules and requirements, some staffing for litter patrol, trash can steam cleaning, bulky item pickup on the residential side. That's where residential ratepayers are allowed twice per year. Bulky item pickup, the abandoned materials program, and that is where Recology picks up large bulky items that are abandoned on sidewalk and streets throughout the city. And then finally, the ongoing program that is maybe not as well known as some of the others is a proactive illegal dumping operation that Public Works partners with Recology on. For four times a week, Recology will send some staff and a packer to work really very collaboratively and hand in hand with public works staff working to remove illegal dumping, primarily in the Bayview neighborhood. So in the upcoming rate process and in our budget, we hope to continue those successful programs. A couple upcoming changes that we hope to get in the upcoming rate process. We are seeking approval from the Refuge Rate Board of one new position, and that is for a trash can manager position. And I'll go through in a little more detail of what that position is. And then I'm going to talk about at length towards the end of the presentation about the plan to procure over 3,000 new trash cans and install each of those trash cans with sensors that will really work to improve efficiency both on the ecology side but also on the public works side to effectively use resources to maintain city trash cans. And all of these items I'll go through in additional detail as my presentation continues. Finally, one of the items we hope to achieve is to really clarify and memorial roles and expectations. Want to make sure that Recology continues to do the great job that they're doing, removing the debris, not just in the city trash can, but the debris within a close proximity of that trash can. I'm sure everyone on this meeting has seen a trash can where it's overflowing and there's debris and refuse on the sidewalk right around it. Also want to memorialize the frequency of trash can service, improve the tracking and monitoring of performance, and improve the trash can maintenance and repairs. Next slide, please, Ben. And so going through the budget, this is pretty detailed, and I want to spend a little time here. And I really want to talk first about that middle column that says ongoing, $9.5 million. Public Works receives the impound account $9.5 million. That's an ongoing amount that has stayed relatively flat with only minor COLA adjustments. And really that is for, if you look at the far right of the slide, you can see what those items are. The one team, our litter patrol, we've got some small money for a refuse rate analyst. Then we've partnered with a nonprofit organization to keep trash cans clean, as well as some base money for trash can repair and maintenance, and then purchase of materials and new trash cans of the existing ones to keep them going as well. And then the big one-time item you can see of $11.9 million of reallocating of prior year savings, and then a $3.1 million use of fund balance. That totals $15 million. And that will be for procurement of the trash cans for the 3,300 trash cans. And I'll spend a little bit more time going through those numbers in greater detail. Next slide, please, Ben. So we currently receive and we'll ask for the Refuge Rate Board continuation of $6.7 million for continued staff for the outreach and enforcement team. In short, we call that the one team. This started in 2013, and the team is really responsible for educating merchants, property owners, and residents of their roles and responsibilities regarding street and sidewalk cleanliness, as well as enforcing codes to ensure sanitation standards are met. So to give you an example, if we see a small business or a homeowner that maybe does not have Recology services, but we find a lot of packaged materials or envelopes or other debris with that address, we would reach out to that individual homeowner and or property owner to go through their rules and requirements, such as ensuring that they get services from Recology. We're also fortunate enough to get about 16 staff that help keep the city clean, and those are really our litter patrol and block sweepers, so some general laborers and then truck drivers that remove debris from the sidewalks. And then I mentioned earlier, roughly $90,000 for some public works labor costs just to maintain and repair the existing trash cans. Next slide, please, Ben. Thank you. And then we get just under $3 million, 2.8 to be exact, of non-labor costs. And one of the key programs we have that was new in 2017 is Public Works partners with a nonprofit Currently, the Community Youth Center, who we solicited through a competitive RFP process, to go through and on a regularly scheduled basis, do a thorough steam cleaning and pick up any trash around the around city trash cans to keep them clean. That allows the public works staff to focus on litter patrol, steaming of sidewalks, and picking up garbage throughout the city. There is a routine schedule for every single trash can, and it depends on the use and wear and tear. So for instance, a trash can at 7th and Market may get more steam cleaning than a trash can in the Outer Sunset that maybe isn't used or doesn't have as much wear and tear. The other key part of this program is CYC staff will notify public works staff of any graffiti or malfunction or damaged trash cans, and will then help us effectively work to go out and maintain and repair these trash cans. And that's about $1.7 million annually in that funding. Public Works also does get just under $1 million for some funds to maintain, both with our own staff for some labor costs, and then parts and other materials and supplies, replacement of hinges or doors or other elements of a trash can that maybe is in a state of disrepair. So we get some small funding there. And then there's roughly $168,000 in some analytical support that Public Works used to get when we were doing more work involved in the rate application process, that can be made available to the controller's office or else, or for other purposes, to assist and support the refuse rate process. Next slide, please. So one of the items that has certainly been in the news, and if you're on this call, I'm sure it's on your radar, is Public Works went through a very thorough and detailed trash can pilot. Our existing trash cans are nearing the end of their useful life, and we need to go through an effort to repair and replace the trash cans that we have. So we set up as part of the pilot, we had over half a dozen different varieties that we issued on city streets to test the efficacy and efficiency and really have the public, Public Works, and Recology provide feedback, as well as our partners in community benefit districts, to see which can was the best solution. So some of the criteria that we really evaluated specifically were they had to be rummage resistant and tamper proof. As I mentioned a little earlier, one of the items that you often see around some of the city trash cans is you'll see debris next to the trash can. If someone has gone in rummaging looking for something and pulled it out and left it on the sidewalk, we wanted to make the trash cans that we go forward with in the future rummage resistant. We also wanted to increase our efficiency in terms of our ability to service and maintain these trash cans, as that improves our staff time and makes our work more efficient. I'm going to talk about sensor ready and what trash can sensors are in a few minutes, but we wanted to make sure that the design of all of these trash cans were sensor ready. We also wanted to make sure that they could easily accommodate the 32-gallon rolling bin that makes it easy and efficient for Recology to pick up and remove the debris from the trash cans. And then finally, they needed to be durable. The trash cans in San Francisco get a lot of wear and tear, and so durability was a key component. So we put the trash cans at 52 pilot locations throughout the city. We had a very thorough and extensive 2-month outreach strategy where we received over 1,000 responses and over 66,000 responses on social media. We then took all of the solicitation and feedback we received, and then we held individual meetings both with Recology staff, Public Works staff, and our community benefit district partners to see what their preferences were and to solicit their feedback to make sure that there was alignment amongst all of the key stakeholders. And as you can see in the photo on the slide, by overwhelming choice, the model that made the most sense and met the most criteria was the slim silhouette design. Next slide, please. So on a previous slide, and I really want to emphasize this point, if there's a key takeaway from Public Works on the trash cans and the funding for that, it's this point right here. There will be no additional impact on future rate years. So In this upcoming rate model, we will not ask for additional funding from the rate board to procure trash cans. Public Works is planning to use prior year savings and use of fund balance from the impound account and refuse rates to the tune of $3.1 million in fund balance and $11.9 million in prior year savings to fund the procurement of the trash cans. That's a total of $15 million for 3,300 trash cans. We firmly believe that we will not need all of that money. So our next steps, we will issue a RFP, we'll solicit a competitive RFP, where we'll contain detailed design specifications. The manufacturer will have to do some shop drawings. The manufacturer will also most likely need to do prototypes and have an iterative design process related to the various fabrication methods. There's a few other steps and approvals we need. We've already had several discussions with members of the board on this, but because this contract will exceed $10 million, this will need approval from the Board of Supervisors. We will also need, before we proceed and get too far down the road, approval from the Civic Design Review, as well as from the Planning Department's Historic Preservation Commission. So quite a lot of processes still to go on the procurement of the trash cans, but we are making progress and moving the ball down the road. So it's very exciting for us here at Public Works. Next slide, please. And one key thing that we want to make sure we're doing as part of the upcoming rate process and a lot of our work here at Public Works is we want to make sure we're doing things efficiently and effectively as possible. So one of the key criteria that we felt was critical for the new trash can design was the ability of the trash cans to hold what's called trash can sensors. So Public Works has been doing a pilot, and right now we've implemented 960 trash can sensors throughout the city and the major corridors. And really what these sensors do is they monitor the fullness, the temperature, and the fill rates to identify patterns and usage of when the city trash cans need to be filled. The sensors will send through 311 a request to Recology indicating that the cans need to be emptied. And the goal is to mitigate container overflow, reduce the number of collections, optimize operations, and increase overall efficiency. So right now with the 960, we're currently evaluating the efficacy of it, and the new position, the trash can monitor, one of the key roles of that position will be to keep track of the data. So on this slide, if you look to the far right, in the top right, you'll see some trash cans. This is around City Hall, and you can see red means they're getting close to being full. Green means they're good. And if you look in the lower right, you can see the impact of when the trash cans are emptied. So this is just prototype data. The other thing we're getting is we're getting all of the data and running it through our analytical models through Power BI and other tools, so we can really begin analyzing the efficiency of this and working with Recology to increase the overall efficiency of their operations. And again, with the goal of help increasing operational efficiency and keeping the city as clean as possible. So these are really the basic items we want. Again, it's Public Works, and the core mission is to keep the city clean. I think they're much like Jack was saying on environment, a lot of overlap with, I think, what the city partners want to do as well as some of the goals for Recology. So with that, that wraps up my presentation, and look forward to questions at the end of the presentations, and we'll turn it over to Jamario for the Recology presentation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bruce. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to be presenting on the rate change request submission that Recology made to the Controller's Office on March 7, 2023. My name is Jamario Jackson. I'm the Government and Community Relations Manager for Recology, and today I'm joined by members of our team who helped put together our proposal, and we're here to answer questions you may have within the scope of that proposal. And so with me today is Dan Shea, our Vice President and Regional Manager, John Braslaw, Director of Business System Services, Terry Duong, our Regional Controller, Maurice Quillen, our General Manager of Recology San Francisco, Anthony Crescenti, General Manager of Recology Sunset Scavenger, Kevin Flanagan, General Manager of Recology Golden Gate, and Becky Holden-All, Senior Waste Zero Manager. And Recology is a 100% employee-owned company. We're based out of San Francisco, born and bred here, and we're committed to paying fair wages to our hardworking employee owners, while also making sure that we're charging competitive and fair rates to our customers. And we do this all by taking care of our part to keep the city clean and to help the city meet and achieve its climate action goals. Next slide, please. So in my presentation, I'll be discussing Recology's commitment to San Francisco as a local company here providing services to the city. I'll give some examples of key programs that serve ratepayers and provide some examples. I'll then go into some business impacts that help guide our proposal that we submitted to the controller's office. I'll explain those impacts, and then I'll also go into explaining how those impacts and the relationship there between the rate change request and the increase that we're proposing. And then we'll apply that increase to current and proposed rates, and then compare that to similar size cities in the Bay Area. And then from there, we'll go into our question and answer period. And so throughout the presentation, I'll also be referring to our rate change submission as a proposal. And this is because the proposal is not final, and it's still going to require a detailed review of the city, and they'll make a final determination before any rates are then implemented. And we look forward to continue working with the controller's office throughout this process of increasing transparency in the rate setting process and also the rate reporting process. Next slide. So our commitment as a local company here in San Francisco is to provide excellent and fair service, while at the same time enhancing programs and keeping San Francisco clean and helping to achieve the city's climate action goals. And I mentioned earlier that we're a local company, but that's also one of the unique points about Recology, that we've been serving this community for 100 years, and we're able to connect and work hard to understand the needs of the community and respond to the needs, and we think our proposal does that. Next slide. So we offer three-stream collection service. So we collect the green bin, materials in the green bin, the gray bin, and also the blue bin. And we also provide a suite of services and programs in addition to doing that work. And so we've provided some examples on the screen for you today, categorizing them into two areas that are both important to us, but that we also know is important to residents and businesses and the city as a whole, and that's keeping San Francisco clean and supporting the city's climate action goals. And so there's 29 programs in total. We shared a couple with you today, and although we've divided them into two categories, all of these programs are complementary of one another and support one another and are also supported under the rate itself. And I'll talk specifically about some enhancements to the existing programs within our rate change proposal. Next slide. So one of our existing programs is also a program that we would like to enhance. And so we're proposing additional service in areas with debris in the public right of way. And the proposal would provide additional vehicles and additional personnel to proactively respond to the service demand for our abandoned materials collection here in San Francisco. And these particular responses to debris in the public right-of-way are received through the city's 311 system, and then we dispatch our crews out there to then service the material from the street. Next slide. The second program that we also would like to enhance is that in our proposal, we're proposing extra weekday and weekend service to what we call city cans, which are public receptacle cans spread throughout San Francisco. And so the increase in service in this particular program would expand our ability to make service adjustments that match the dynamic needs of the neighborhoods where these city cans are specifically located. Next slide. And then there's a third enhancement that we would like to make, and this is pretty much centered around a lot of outreach and education, and that's regarding contamination management to our green bin, which is accepts compostable material, and then we turn that material into compost. So it's a very specific process, and ensuring that we have the accurate and accepted material in those containers is really important to make sure that we produce high quality compost for farmers and those that are supported from that compost. And so for us, it's really thinking about it first and foremost, engaging our customers to improve their behaviors, their sorting behaviors in specific, and then two, fixing the problem that they may have regarding sorting and contamination at the point of collection. And then thirdly, investing in pre-processing equipment to make sure that we've done all we can to educate and sort and pre-sort before the material has been transported to our Blossom Valley Organics facility, where the material will then be turned into compost. Next slide, please. And so, as I mentioned earlier at the beginning part of the presentation, there's been a number of business impacts regarding the rate and our business itself. And so specifically since the last rate setting process more than 6 years ago, there's been some changes to the business environment that we operate in. And so we wanted to call those out specifically. And so the next three slides will look at the reduction in commercial activity and how that led to a reduction in tonnage. And then lastly, we'll look at increased labor costs. Next slide. So commercial revenue, and again, this slide and the next slide are going to be sort of like cause and effect and very, very interconnected. So keep this slide and the next slide in mind as we go through this part of the presentation. There's been a number of ongoing effects from the pandemic. So not just things that have happened that have affected our business during the pandemic, but even persisting thereafter. And what we're seeing is a decrease in economic activity in San Francisco. We're seeing fewer construction projects. We're seeing fewer visitors. We're seeing fewer workers in our downtown offices of San Francisco. And as a result of this, we're also seeing a decrease in tonnage. And the decrease that we're seeing now is not typical of what we would see at pre-pandemic levels. And the revenue and the tonnage, we'll start to see on the next slide, a closer look at what that relationship kind of entails. So as we're looking at the tonnage, we're seeing a comparison on this slide from the previous rate year and seeing how tonnage has not increased to those pre-pandemic levels. And specifically for rate year 2019 through rate year 2023, there's been about a 20% decrease, over 20% decrease in tonnage. And so as tons decrease, the tipping fee that we'll see on the next slide, the tipping fee then increases, and it increases to cover costs to support the system itself. Just right before we get there, there's labor costs as another business impact that has happened during the pandemic and persisted through the pandemic. We've seen the cost of labor increase. And so with the introduction of local and state requirements, we want to keep up with those requirements, and to do so, we've seen an increase in our labor costs. Can we go back to the previous slide? One more thing that I want to mention on that. The important thing with the labor costs is that in our proposal, we're proposing the additional investment in or to support the labor costs, but it's also because to maintain uninterrupted service. As a big part of our service delivery. So now we can go to the next slide. So with all these things in mind, the business impacts, our commitment to San Francisco, the programs that are also supported under the rate, and then the enhancements that we want to do for these programs as well, we're proposing a 3.9% increase for rate year 2024, and we're proposing a 2.17% increase for rate year 2025. Next slide. There's also a rate increase, as I mentioned a little earlier, there's a rate increase for the tipping fee. The rate increase for the tipping fee would be 16.36% for rate year 2024, and for rate year 2025, it will be 0.08% of an increase. And the tipping fee itself is a fee that is applied for those, or anyone rather, that would be dumping at our processing facility that's a part of RSF. And so there's been tonnage and labor aspects to our businesses or to our business that have been experienced during COVID-19 as impacts. And so this is why the tipping fee specifically is the number that you're seeing on the screen. It's because of a large part because of those impacts economic wise and also the decrease in tonnage. And for us, we feel these costs or this rate that we're proposing for the tipping fee in particular is necessary to support the system as a whole. Next slide. So now we can start to see what the proposed rates would look like side by side. So for example, we're looking at the default service, the default service for most customers, and that would be a 16-gallon gray, a 64 blue, and a 32 green. You can see the current price for that default service. And then next to it, the last two columns, you can see what the proposed increase would then do to that price. And from our perspective, we're seeing that, and if, can we go to the next slide? That the amount that customers in San Francisco would be paying is still less than $50, and it's also less than our neighboring cities in Oakland and in San Francisco. And so even after proposed increases, residential rates are below our closest comparable cities. And not only that, San Francisco residential rates are an excellent value, and there's uniquely designed programs to meet San Francisco's needs that are built into that rate specifically. Again, our rates remain under $50 in comparison to those neighboring cities. And as I sum everything up here, we remain committed to San Francisco. We're a local company. Our customer service is local. Our workers know the city and these streets well. Our rates are competitive. And although there's been a number of different economic impacts to our business, we've still pushed forward, and we've put together a proposal that is sustaining and enhancing existing programs that many San Franciscans love and enjoy. And then these programs that we're proposing are also helping to keep San Francisco clean and support the city in achieving its climate action goals. And we understand the economic impact many families and businesses are facing throughout the city. And the team behind me today that worked and put together this proposal did everything that we could to adjust any operational mechanisms within our control to help keep the rate that we're proposing as low as possible. Next slide. And so on behalf of our employee owners, thank you for your time and attention to our presentation, and we're happy to take your question. Thank you.
Great. Next slide, please. So I think we're moving into public comment and question period here. So as we mentioned earlier, if you are on WebEx, you can hit the raise hand button if you're interested in making comment. If you're on the calling in, you can dial *3 and that will put you in the queue.
This caller.
The first caller has been unmuted. There's no name. It's just a
chat. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. It's David Pilkow. Good afternoon, and welcome to the rate process this year. It's been 6 long years, and good that we're doing this. There's a lot of introductory comments that I could make, but assuming there are hundreds of people paying attention here, and I only have 2 minutes, let me make some brief comments, and if there's more time later, I'm happy to discuss further. So I am a member of the public and a residential refuse ratepayer. I have a deep and long-term interest in fair refuse rates and have been following this process closely for probably 30 years. My four most pertinent points today, first on process and capacity. The question is, does the controller's office, your small but mighty staff of 2 of you, have the internal capacity for both analysis, communications, all kinds of work that needs to be done here without consultant support? in this compressed timeframe to actually review the submission from Recology, the input from the city departments, assimilate the public comment, do all the things that need to be done here, again, without consultant support. There are an incredibly limited number of people that know how this process works and all the various bits and pieces. Having different eyes on the material, I think, is useful and important. The questions that Douglas Legg raised on Tuesday, I think, were great. Having Douglas's participation is key here. Having somebody like Brad Benson from the port in the loop, I think, would be invaluable. And whether it's Garth from R3 or Rob Hilton from HF&H, Ruth Abbey, or anybody in her orbit or that she knows, having folks that know about this, particularly those with refuse collection, processing, and disposal operating experience, as opposed to just financial folks, would be, I think, invaluable to all of us. So that's on process. The second is really a correlation question. I still don't understand how a higher RSF tip fee doesn't flow through as clearly as I would think it would to Schedule A. And if we can get some discussion about the assumptions that are driving that, I get that there are business impacts, there may be some fund balance. I just don't see how that higher RSF tip fee of double digits doesn't result in a double digit increase in Schedule A residential rates. Next is, for me, the highest priorities here are really three, and they're all connected. First is less contamination. That's less contamination from customers and from Recology post-processing. The second is more processing to, in fact, result in less contamination. And the third is a facilities plan. And I think those things are both connected and not so connected. So the connected part is, as relates to contamination from customers, having meaningful incentives, cameras, ramping up love notes, contamination fees, just putting a $5 million plug number in the application, but not really having a plan to achieve either that as a revenue item or operationalize that for customers, makes it a lot less meaningful to me. So that's contamination, processing, and facilities. And I really would like to see, you know, not in the next 6 months, but definitely in the next 2 years, the question resolved about Pier 96 and whether blue processing stays there, and what facilities really need to be on campus at Tunnel Ave and what things don't, and a phased remodeling plan, dusting off the old plans, but really figuring out what needs to be where on site, on campus, for the future. The next point I have is on black cart processing. I very much support what Jack talked about for black cart processing. Initially, yes, it should be offsite. I'm interested in this pilot at Waste Management in the East Bay. Other options include East Bay Mud, other facilities in the Bay Area. I'm sorry if Recology doesn't currently have the capacity to do that in the city on site, but that's okay. We should see who's got the best technology, whether we could site something in the city, scale it up, et cetera. But that's why this black cart processing pilot is so critical, is to really get through the stuff that's now in the pit and just going to landfill disposal, and divert as much of that to green, also blue, and reduce our transport to landfill. So those are my highest priorities. I intend to follow up with a more detailed letter to staff and expect that it'll be considered and shared. If there's more time, I'm happy to raise other issues or engage in discussion here, whether it's the impound account, PDRA diversion, quarterly reporting, any number of things. I can go pretty deep here. It's nice that John Braslaw is in the loop because he clearly has the most time and expertise on the Recology side, and there's just been so much turnover that it's really important that we both understand how things work, but also look to what needs to be done to change things here. That's my quick introduction. Sorry if I went over time. Happy to come back if there's more time. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Pilpel. If anybody else would like to speak, you can either raise your hand on the web platform, or if you're on the phone, please press star 6.
Star 3.
Excuse me, star 3, sorry.
I think while we're waiting to see if folks, if there are other interested participants, maybe we can address some of the things that David mentioned. I'll try to kind of direct questions. His first question was about process and capacity in the controller's office. So point well taken. We are definitely consulting with Douglas and Brad, as folks have mentioned. We're also we're looking at options for possible consulting support for review of some of the application pieces of the application. So that's definitely something that we're considering for this process. The other piece I wanted to address, you had mentioned a facilities plan. Really unlikely that we'll have something for this rate order, but as you mentioned, you know, I think that's something that's on our list for over the next 2 years that we'll probably, that we'll want to address for the following rate order. Then there was a question around correlation on higher RSF tipping fee and how that translates into lower lower collection rates. So I think that's something that we can we should have Recology talk about.
And Jay, I'm happy to do that. This is John Braslaw. David, you're correct. The increased tipping fee at RSF does translate into an additional cost at Sunset and Golden Gate. Sunset and Golden Gate are about 90, a little north of 90% of the tipping fee revenue that comes into the processing facility. But because there are a number of other costs, there are cost savings, there's a lot of influence kind of factors that impact the rate at Sunset and Golden Gate. The companies have worked hard to try to maintain operational efficiencies. And given all the inputs, the increase at RSF does flow through Sunset and Golden Gate. And as Jamario explained, the net result is an increase of 3.9% for projected for rate year 2024. So we have fully accounted for the RSF cost in the Sunset and Golden Gate projections.
Thanks, John. The other was around black card processing. I don't think there was a question, just kind of in support of that. We'll definitely note that comment and look forward to additional written comment from you, David. I don't know if anyone wanted to address the black card processing, but.
Jay, David made a point three about contamination. I'd like to address.
Oh, yes, please. Yeah, I missed that. Sorry. Please, Dan.
David, I'm Dan Shea. I'm the regional vice president. And wow, some great questions you asked. Very, very well informed. I just wanted to tackle your third point about less contamination. In the detail of our plan, it's really broken into three parts. It's dealing with the customer on, like you said, a notification basis, an education basis, and a more streamlined and efficient contamination fine holding those people who are contaminating accountable for those expenses as opposed to their broad ratepayer base. The second part of it does involve increased technology and the use of cameras to identify those accounts and help shape a better policy and a more efficient way of dealing with contamination. And that those costs were included in the rate in the proposal. And then the last part included money for a pre-processing to your part, so that we are taking out, if we miss it in the education before it gets into the truck, if we miss it at the truck with the camera, there's a chance with the new pre-processing equipment that we put into the plan to ultimately get that cleaner feedstock in. And the great news about that is that ends up saving the ratepayer money because there's less truck trips, better air quality, and it does, and it really meets some of the climate action goals. And so that's why we put those things in there. And I really thank you for highlighting that. But those are some of the more detailed facts as to what that line item means. And I hope that answers your question, sir.
Yeah, one thing I'll add is that, you know, we're early in the review process of the submission. We've sent an initial response, and it does include requests for exhibits on details of the contamination request, and then also a series of requests for exhibits that I think attempt at getting at some of the assumptions for how the rate calculations are made. And so, as Jamario mentioned, you know, that first submission was an initial submission. I think we're allowing amendments. So as we move along this process, you'll see that change a little bit as we gather more information from ecology. I'm going to wait if there are any additional questions, maybe a minute or two before we close out.
Just a reminder to the public, you can press *3 if you're on the phone, or raise your hand if you'd like to speak. I also have a comment that's come in on our web form that I can read here. It says a salvage company has already been raising rates for years, money for can sizes, limited extra pickup. The rates are compounded by extra rates of higher PG&E, gas prices, water. People do not make these high percentage increases, making SF unlivable. I see David has his hand up again. I'll unmute you, David.
Great, David Pilpel again. I'm not sure if you want to respond to that comment. I'm very pleased that I'm not the only one paying attention. That's at least 100% increase if it's someone else besides me. But I'm happy, since we're all here and we've got a half an hour program, I'm happy to spend a little more time if you're all interested in going into some more detail on some other things. What's staff pleasure? Okay.
Yeah, we can, in case, David, if you have a few other questions, feel free to ask. And if someone comes up, we can pause and allow them to speak.
That's fine. I again, very happy to have others in the loop here. I appreciate the follow-up comment on operational efficiency. It's good, in fact, if there are increased costs at RSF that are being covered by the tip fee, but there are operational savings at RSS and RGG that minimize the flow through. So that's great. Maybe I can find that in the detailed submissions. I'm sorry, I've not had a chance to read those yet. I am very interested in the program summary narrative, as well as the spreadsheets. In the past, there was some concern about having public linked spreadsheets with the formulas. I think we're hopefully past that point where the company can share linked spreadsheets with details. This is only describing what they have. Anyway, I think that should all be public. I think that's helpful for the public to see, for the staff to analyze, for everybody to have access to. If we're going to be transparent, then I think we're all being transparent. I'm just not on camera right now because I don't want to scare anybody. That's the only reason I'm not being that transparent. And to Dan Shea, I look forward to meeting you in person. We have not had a chance to meet yet, nor some of the other new folks. So there's clearly lots more detail that underlies all of this. For example, as relates to the impound account, although I appreciate what Jack and Bruce described earlier, I'm very interested in, and this is really not the biggest element of what's going on here, is the impound account, let's be clear. But I'm interested in a summary for each of the three city departments, and perhaps four if you include the controller's costs, which I assume are in here or should be. Is the particular program within each department, whether it's zero waste, toxics, outreach, or other, the FTE count, but also the FTE breakdown. So how many 56, 44s, 42s, 40s, 38s, 22s over environment, and same thing at DPW. We have typically not heard a lot from DPH, but I'm interested in what is it, Bonita, Veronica, whatever. They're, the LEA function and the other functions that DPH provides to get the breakdown on those costs, labor and non-labor. And I think that would appropriately cover at DPW, for example, the new 1824 that's proposed, as well as the trash cans and all of that. And yes, I understand that there's no increase for the new trash cans. Bruce, I got that. No increase to the customer. Okay. And you know, it may be that we finagle around the edges, and so there's a new position, but it's not an 1824, that it lands as an 1822 or an 1823, and that covers not just trash can analysis, but any other DPW analysis function related to refuse. Some of the functions that may be useful for DPW's coverage of its portion of impound account money. And again, DPH and controller, whatever other city costs there are that I think are appropriately captured in the impound account, to just have a summary of department and program, and then maybe somebody could write up a narrative as to how each of those proposed pieces have some nexus and proportionality to ratepayers, whether or not there's a strict interpretation of Prop 218. I think it goes to the fundamental question of fair and reasonable rates, as to whether ratepayers are covering those costs. And if, in my view, if they're reasonably related to collection, processing and disposal of refuse, and that's open to interpretation, which is why we have a refuse rate board, then I'm good with it. But I think having that narrative is helpful. I think I've said all and probably more than I wanted to say on impound account. So that probably gives folks a little bit of homework or things to think about. In terms of other issues, again, I will try to capture this in a more detailed letter. I'll have to pull up previous submissions and appeals and whatnot that I've done over the years. Something like the PDRA. I mean, sorry, let me step back for a second. The only way, in my view, that we're going to make significant headway in diversion is by doing black cart processing, reducing contamination in a variety of ways, but really it's black cart processing, and to some extent dealing with PDRA and some other more significant things that can be done, like neighborhood cleanups and whatnot, to get to maintain the value of discards for reuse and repair, rather than lowest common denominator and, you know, taking an old chair and it ends up in the landfill. So if you've got an old chair that comes in at PDRA and someone's paying to dispose of it, if it's in a black bag, it's typically just going to end up in the pit, and it's going to end up getting landfilled. If it goes over the ptarmigan line, maybe it'll get caught, et cetera. If there are only three legs, and that's a chair that could probably be reused or sold, whatever. However, if it's only got three legs, if it's treated wood, then that may be a problem because it's treated wood. But if it's untreated wood, that could probably be disassembled, go through the IMRF, and the wood gets captured. And in my experience, most of the stuff that comes in through PDRA, through abandoned materials, AMC, and BIR or BIC, whatever it's called this week, doesn't get as much time and attention for repair and reuse as it could. And there's been a lot of work that Alexa did with Kenny Stewart, with a lot of people in the past. And the more that we could do there with Recology staff, with SFE, with nonprofits, whatever, however, with the community, with, you know, neighborhood pickups in each supervisorial district, if we're going to go back to that, which would be great, I think all of that goes to increased diversion. And I don't want to be doing this again in 2 years, in 5 years, in 10 years, and saying, oh, we're still stuck at 39%, or we, you know, notched it up to 40 or 42%, but neither the company is getting its ZWI money, and, you know, we don't have enough resources to invest in new technology or facilities, and we're really not getting to our 2030 goals, and we're never going to get to zero waste.
Hey, David.
Okay, that wouldn't be good, but let me end it there for a moment. That gives you some stuff to think about.
Thanks. No, thanks, David. We definitely appreciate your comments. I know you have a lot of experience here, so we're definitely looking for your forward to your written comments. But if you have any specific questions, feel free to share. Otherwise, you know, it doesn't seem like other attendees are having questions, so we'll probably move on to the kind of next steps. And you know, you certainly have our numbers, so feel free to touch base with us. And we definitely would like the written comment that's kind of that really goes into record and goes in front of the refuse rate board.
Hey Jay, I just wanted to answer. David did have one question there. I can answer for him.
Sure, please.
It wasn't reflected in our slides, David, but we did reinstitute the neighborhood and community cleanups. That is worked into the rate, and we're hoping to see that program flourish and continue in this next rate.
Okay. So if there's no one else that wants to chime in, we'll go on to just the next steps and close this out. So as I mentioned, we've just started this review process, so we'll be completing the review of Recology's rate change request, and we're conducting our various analyses to kind of support the rate order outside of the review of the rate change request form, and then the draft proposed rate order will go out. And then in between that, we'll be presenting at commissions and the rate board hearing. And so you can see that timeline earlier in the presentation. Just want to include here the resources directing folks to our website, and you'll find on the website also the opportunity for written comment or objection. If you're on this call and didn't want to call in to comment orally, you can write a written objection or written comment. You can also participate in future commission hearings or the rate board hearings. Public information requests, you can use next request, and so that will be found on our website as well. Thank you all for joining us and taking time out of your afternoon to hear our presentation. I hope it was informative, and we look forward to moving along this process and bringing you all along. All right, thank you.
Thanks, everyone.